I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, I'd like to welcome everybody. We're glad you're here tonight. Next is roll call, and we have all our council members here tonight. And the next item is citizen input, so if you'd like to address the council on city business that is not on the agenda tonight, raise your hand. I'll acknowledge you, and you can come up to the microphone, give us your name and address, and I'll give you up to 5 minutes. Okay, do I hear a motion for the approval of the agenda?
So moved.
Dan first?
Second.
Ken Johnson second. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same? Okay, great, that passes. Okay, do I hear a motion on the consent agenda?
So moved.
Okay, Ken Kaler has first?
Second.
Second? Mark second? Okay. Any discussion on that? Nope. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Opposed the same? All right. Great. That passes. Okay. We'll go to current business. 4.1 public hearing moratorium on medical marijuana collective gardens. Okay. This is a public hearing. Please bear with us as we process through the legal and technical aspects of the public hearing. This public hearing is now open at 7:03 p.m. and is being held to receive a staff report and receive public comments on the moratorium on cannabis gardens. This public hearing is required by state law. A 6-month moratorium has been adopted by the City Council. I will now ask the City Attorney to present a report.
Good evening. Thank you, Mayor and Council. Just as a follow-up to the conversation we had when you adopted the ordinance before you, under the state law, when you adopt a moratorium, you are required to hold a public hearing within 60 days after adopting the moratorium. The moratorium can be for a period not to exceed 6 months. However, the council can, after the 6-month initial moratorium, reconsider whether it wishes to extend the moratorium for an additional period or let it expire. And the council, of course, has the option of repealing the moratorium at any time it wishes if it gets to a point where it has sufficient information and regulations in place that it no longer necessitates the moratorium. But as you'll recall, this moratorium was adopted in response to the state legislation, which became effective July 22nd of this year, which authorized medical marijuana gardens, commonly called collective gardens, wherein a qualified patient can participate in a collective garden and have individually up to 15 plants, or as a collective group, they can have up to 45 plants. because the legislation did not specify any of the details regarding where these medical marijuana gardens can be located in your communities and under what circumstances they can be located and how they are to be contained or screened from public view or maintained by the qualified patients, most of our cities have opted to adopt a moratorium to buy time to study these issues and figure out what's going to work in their community. So that's the purpose of the moratorium, and the purpose of tonight's public hearing then is to allow the public the opportunity to come in and voice their opinions on the issue and on the council's action in adopting the moratorium. With that, I would answer any questions that the council might have.
Okay, we'll get to the council in a minute there. Okay, I will now ask for public testimony, questions or objections to be heard from citizens. Please raise your hand so I may recognize you. After I acknowledge you, please come to the microphone and state your name and address for the record. I'll allow up to 5 minutes for each citizen. Okay, since there was no public comment, I will now close the public testimony period. Does any council members have comments or questions at this time?
Does anybody expect the legislature to do something about it, or, you know, to
Yes, we do, actually. And the governor has convened or called for a special legislative session to be convened in November. And we have a commitment from some of the legislators on the west side to definitely bring this back before the House and Senate for some further modification or at least some further direction.
Any more questions from council? Okay, then I will now close the public hearing at 7:06 p.m. Okay. Next on our agenda is 4.2, resolution supporting the EMS Levy Hospital District Number 3, Proposition 1, Resolution Number 11-04, EMS Levy. This is an agenda item, thus giving the public the right to present any other views before the council considers the resolution. The ballot title of the resolution is Adams County Public Hospital District Number 3 has adopted a resolution to proposing a ballot measure for a regular property tax levy. This measure will authorize the district to levy a regular property tax estimate at $414,209 for a period of 6 consecutive years at a rate of 0.40 per $1,000 of assessment valuation for emergency medical care and services. Harry, are you going to present this to the council?
Yes, thank you. You want a few quick comments first before questions, Mayor?
Go, it's all yours. Go for it.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for giving me this time this evening. Very much appreciate it. So the situation, of course, at the hospital, you're all aware of the state, Red Ink and Olympia, and their hospital was cut in the past year $1.4 million in reimbursement in basic health program, disproportionate share programs. And at that time, we're barely operating in the black right now. We're anticipating that by the end of this calendar year, we'll be operating in the red. Next year, we gave our board a budget last Thursday evening, a draft budget for fiscal year 2012. In three different scenarios, 4, 6, 8% price increase. All scenarios had seven-digit operating losses for next year. So the financial fortunes have changed radically in the past 18 to 24 months at the hospital, to the point that where we're running the ambulance services at losses between $300,000 and $400,000 a year. It's not a mandated service under state law. It's an unfunded issue. We're perfectly content operating the ambulance service. The board has done due diligence. It's investigated different options over the past number of years. We've talked to the city. We've talked to the fire department. A year ago, Grant County Fire District number 5 went out for bid to privatize its ambulance service, and it was successful in doing so. We tried to latch onto that effort, and we met with American Medical Response. But they wanted as much of a financial subsidy from the hospitals we're already losing. So we figured if it was going to cost us that much, we'd just as soon keep it locally controlled and locally owned. So we are running. We ran the levy last year. We need 60% of the electorate to pass. Last fall, we lost 60 to 40%. This year, we have a very concerted effort. We have 40 citizens on our listserv, a Citizens for EMS Levy Committee that's formed. Very active, very energized. So we're working much harder this year than we did last year. And so we've got some optimism that it will pass this year. But an endorsement from City Council would sure go a long way toward helping us meet our goal. That, I'll take some questions.
Any questions from the citizens before I go to the council? Okay, council, we have questions. Mark?
According to the statement here, the levy is estimated to bring in $414,000. Does that cover the total cost of the ambulance service, or is the hospital still going to subsidize out of other funds?
Yes, that should cover the total cost of the ambulance service, although in our three-year capital budget, we do have plans for modeling out the ambulance station, purchase of additional vehicles. Now, what we did a year ago, we increased prices significantly on our charges for the ambulance. I think a base rent went up from something like $600 to $1,000, it went up significantly. So in this resolution that you read from the hospital, it's our commitment. If it actually starts to operate in the black, we will lower our prices. So the goal is to operate at a break-even basis, which would include depreciation expense on capital items, but that is the goal. Hopefully it should cover. That's what we're planning on.
If your forecast is the hospital is going to be operating possibly in the red by the end of the year, we also currently pay a hospital levy. Mm-hmm. Is there a chance that portion of it will go up?
No, I believe we're at the max. No.
So just to be clear, at 40 cents per thousand, a hundred somebody owning a $100,000 house will be paying $40 a year on this levy.
Yes, that's correct for six consecutive years. Mm-hmm. And actually, just for accuracy's sake, we just received the Proposition 1 levy from Heidi Hunt in Ritzville, and she says the regular property tax would be estimated at $396,428 per year for 6 years, as opposed to the $414,209 in the resolution. That was older data that we had, so we have more current data. And you know, we, as I said, we have no problems running it. We have an excellent ambulance service. We need adequate financial resources to do so. If we don't have the adequate financial resources to do so, we've been in contact with the state, and the state would appreciate if we would provide the state and the community 6 months' notice before we would cease operating the ambulance service. As the resolution says, if this resolution doesn't pass this fall, we'll notify the community and the state that we will no longer run the service at the end of June of 2012.
Can you give a synopsis of how you run it? Are they EMTs? Is there two on call and volunteer backup? Mm-hmm. There are out-of-town people. How are we doing the ambulance service now? Yeah,
there are two on-site 24 hours a day. And if we need a second ambulance, then we put out an all-call for people to come in to man a second vehicle.
Are those volunteers, or are they?
They're paid.
Paid.
They're all paid.
So there's enough local people to?
Well, we have a combination of people that live in Grant County and Othello, which is true at the hospital at large, too. A lot of our employees commute from Moses Lake.
Do they have to be EMTs per se to be on our ambulance staff?
Yes, there are three categories: EMT basic, EMT intermediate, and then EMT paramedic. We have primarily EMT basics with a handful of EMT intermediates, higher level training. Seems to match the vast majority of cases we treat. But it's a good match for our patient case acuity mix.
Any other questions?
I got a strange question. When you go to a football game, there's always an ambulance there. Is that required by the state? Is it required by the who would be there if we didn't have an ambulance service? You have to get somebody out of Moses Lake or something?
Well, yeah, and that's something we provide. That's community service. We don't charge a school for that service. That's a $64,000 question. What would happen if there were no locally based ambulance service? You'd page 9111. The nearest ambulance service would come out of most likely Moses Lake. If one's available, you would have to wait at least 30, 45 minutes for an ambulance to come here.
The state doesn't require that there be one on site?
No. There's no mandate on the hospital to provide an ambulance service. There's no mandate on the county to provide an ambulance service. There's no mandate on the city to provide an ambulance service. And I hope I'm not coming across glib on this ambulance service, but things are just so treacherous with the state budget right now. We shared a letter with our commissioners last Thursday evening. I have a copy with me. I can leave with him, and if you'd like to see it, it's from Doug Porter, who runs the State of Washington Healthcare Authority, the Medicaid program. And the governor, you may be aware, about 6 weeks ago ordered her department heads to develop contingency plans of 10% budget reductions across the board. The cuts are just absolutely mind-boggling. At the top of Doug Porter's list is $128,000 of savings by taking 500,000 Medicaid people off prescription drug coverage. In this letter from Doug Porter, he said it's grim, it's very grim, it's bad, it's going to affect patient lives. No doubt about it. You know, you take a 500,000 people off their medications, what's going to happen? Something bad may happen at their home. If they're fortunate enough to get to the hospital, they're going to be in very serious condition. No insurance. It would simply be a bad debt charity care write-off for the board of directors. What the state is facing now is just something that any of us have faced in our lifetime. It is just a treacherous time. And the second big issue there, which I found on Friday, the day after board meeting, was that the one blip Doug Porter wanted to revise the Medicaid reimbursement formula for what are called 38 critical access hospitals in the state. We're a critical access hospital. Heretofore, we've been paid our cost to take care of Medicaid patients. The state wants to eliminate that reimbursement formula in its entirety. So that we would probably lose 25% of our reimbursement Medicaid patients. Doug Porter's proposals, if enacted by legislature, would be effective January 1. We would see overnight our Medicaid reimbursement drop by $2.3 million a year. So we're looking at some staggering financial issues at our hospital, and as are all the small rural hospitals in the state. It's just a very tricky time.
Does the I understand you could operate in the red, or your revenues don't cover your expenses, but does the hospital have a reserve they can tap into?
Yeah, we've got a reserve. We have about $900,000 a year in depreciation expense. We did project a positive cash flow budget for next year. How long that can continue, 3, 4, 5 years, I really don't know. Really can't speculate. Any other questions, comments?
I'd like to hear when you mentioned another community might show up, and emphasize might if an event available ambulance, because they're going to take care of their own community first.
Yes.
Definitely before they show up here.
Right. Agreed.
And I think this would be a devastating blow to lose our EMS economically and just for our community. We always want a better life. I think losing that service would just be a big blow to the community. So I think it's very important to.
Agreed. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a great service in our community. We sure don't want to lose that if we can help have it happen, that's for sure. Well, thank you, Harry, for your time and for coming and speaking before us. Is there anybody here that would like to speak on an opposite view of the hospital? An opposing view, I should say. You got something?
Not opposing, but I just wanted to make a comment just based on my experience with some of our other communities who have struggled with maintaining an ambulance service. And most people don't think about an ambulance service until they have a need to take a ride in an ambulance, and then it becomes absolutely critical, the quality of care that they have and the timeliness of the response. Efrato lost its ambulance service not too long ago, and we have a contract with American Medical Response. But the one thing that you lose when you lose local control is you lose the ability to dictate what level of service you're going to have in your community. And it is not required when you divest yourself of your ambulance service that the carrier who comes in operate at the same level that you are accustomed to. So there is no state mandate, for instance, that they come in and provide ALS, Advanced Life Support Service. They can come in at a lesser standard and cover your area. It's open on the state level when you do not have a provider for anybody to apply that is qualified. And so there are only a couple ambulance companies that will actually put in bids anymore because it is expensive to run a service. And we have found in our other communities that the level of care is not the same when you no longer have that local control. And once you get out of the ambulance business because of the expense involved in maintaining the equipment and the vehicles and the personnel, you don't you don't go back into the ambulance business once you're out of it. So for your community, you know, I would encourage your citizens to think about what level of care for their ambulance service they really want, because if they lose the local option, they won't have a choice on what comes back in. And it may not be, it may be more than they wanted, but based on my experience, it's not likely. It's more likely that it's going to be a lesser standard than they're accustomed to right now.
Thank you, Catherine.
Just a comment. I should have stuck my nose in when they were talking, I guess, but in all the time that I was on the hospital board, the ambulance service has never been a money maker. Never. Not since day one. And as Kennison says, it gets expensive. And you get, what, $100,000+ for an ambulance? And if you get out of it, you know, that's, you know, you just don't spend that kind of money off the top of your head. And the ambulance service here has been extremely excellent, I think, over the past years that I've been at any connection with it. So I personally, I'd urge the city to get behind it. That's all.
Okay, so I do not have anybody here with an opposing view on EMS here. So we have to make it both ways. Okay, so what can we do as a council, Catherine? Make a motion to support this?
Yes, there is before you a resolution that I drafted in support of the EMS levy. If the council chooses to voice its support, then it needs to make a motion to approve the resolution.
So do I hear a motion?
I'll make the motion that we approve the resolution for the support of the EMS levy.
Do I hear a second? Dan? Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay. Great. That's what we wanted to see. Thank you very much for coming and sharing with us. And
thank you for your support.
Okay. Okay, resolution to accept the Main Street project. Larry?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. As we start to discuss the resolution, we would like to also make a presentation to the Mayor and Council. Just a little something, a collage showing the progress through the project. Primarily Main Street, but also Olympia Street, the Lions Park improvements, and in the upper center is Main Street, turn of the century. And then in the middle, Main Street before any of the work commenced, and then Main Street from basically the same view at about Broadway looking east after completion.
Well, thank you. It's nice. It's nice.
Before you this evening is a resolution pertaining to the 2010 Street and Infrastructure Improvements Project. In July of 2010, the city entered into a contract with MRM Construction for the 2010 Street and Infrastructure Improvements Project. The work required under the contract has been completed and is in compliance with the approved plans and specifications. At this time, staff's recommendation is to accept the project as complete. And as we progress through, there's a few items that, warranty items we wanted to bring to your attention that I think most of you on council is aware of. Pertaining to asphalt, the contractor was out and re-rolled the area in front of CBHA and in front of City Hall, was successful in removing a lot of the wrinkles that were out there, but there's still a few that remain between the two eastbound lanes in front of CBHA between 1st and 2nd. They're aware they need to come back. We've talked to them about how we're going to roll that. Instead of rolling parallel or with the roadway, they're going to try perpendicular to the roadway to see if that is any success in removing those last few wrinkles. If you're in the center of the lanes, you won't feel it, but if you get in between, primarily where the stripe is, where there's not much travel, then you can still feel them. So they're aware, they know they have to fix that. Also, at the intersection of Broadway and Main, if you're traveling east on Main and about to turn right, going south on Broadway, there's an actual tear in the final wearing course of asphalt. At one spot, you can see the fabric or the grid that was placed between the pre-level and the final wearing course. Sometimes that does happen. We talked to various other contractors, and if the mix that goes down is real, what we call bony, or doesn't have a lot of fines in it, that can happen where you'll get a tear or a separation in the asphalt. It doesn't happen all the time. It's the only place where we've seen it on this project, but the contractor is aware of it. The subcontractor, the paving subcontractor, was actually out today, and they're to get back to us this week on their schedule to come fix that. And the fix basically is to cut out the section that's bad, including not only where it's separated, but you can see where there's slight, I call them tears for lack of a better term, that unravel from where the actual separation is. So they have to cut that out and actually physically come back and place more asphalt, compacted asphalt in there. Also, if you head north on Broadway, just north of Main, about right in the middle of the turn lane, there's a slight depression that's occurred. It's just past the match line where the contractor quit paving and matched back up to existing asphalt. But it's close enough to where they were running their equipment that we feel it's definitely their responsibility. And then as you're headed west on Main, again, right about at the center of the intersection just before you would cross Broadway, there's a slight depression that developed. We've been keeping our eye on it with the contractor and Public Works. It hasn't gotten any worse than it was when we first originally saw it, but the contractor has to come back and fix it. And we think what happened there was a compaction issue. That's where they put the storm drain in the middle of the street. And there was also a duct bank of telecommunications they crossed. So we think what happened was they were very careful in not disturbing the duct bank when they backfilled and compacted, but they probably, at that one little spot, didn't get enough compaction. So again, they have to come back and fix that. And they're aware of it, and they'll be getting their schedule to do all that work to us this week. The other item, if you might recall, is on 14th Avenue at the traffic signal. It's working now because the old equipment was put back in. The manufacturer is still working on why the new system was not compatible with the old system. Because if you recall, we didn't completely replace that. We used the existing controller that was there and then basically put new innards in it. So they are aware of that. They're working on the problem. The challenge is there was no record drawings of that existing system, so they're kind of playing it as they go to find out what is and isn't compatible. But they're still on that. That's part of the two-year warranty. And with that, if there's any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
On the, you said in the, if you're heading north, it's up in the turn lane?
Across Broadway? Yeah, it's almost right in the middle of...
Between the two lanes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not very big. It developed not too long ago, but we definitely watch that and want to make sure we get to it before a big glory hole develops.
Yeah, it's getting deeper. I hit it every day.
Oh, do you? Okay. Good. We'll make sure it gets taken care of.
I guess, Larry, my question is, why are we accepting a project that's not totally done yet?
These are warranty items that occurred after substantial completion. That's when the warranty starts, and that was back in, I believe it was back in either latter part of May or first of June. and that's when the work is done except for minor cleanup items, paperwork items, and by contract, that's when the warranty starts. It typically is not considered part of the contract as far as the original work, because the original work was complete, but it's considered part of warranty, which the city has a bond for from the contractor for 2 years. So anything that does happen within the 2 year period after substantial completion, the contractor's still on the hook to come back and fix.
Go ahead, Ken.
This situation with our ripple effect and whatnot on that street, there's a lot more places than just those two. I mean, they're all the way up Main Street, several different lanes are even on the east side coming down the other place. I could point them out to you, but,
okay.
But there's more than just those one or two. My question is, it's too late to do anything this year because we're not going to have any more 100-degree temperature unless you want to go out to heat up that thing and make it 110 degrees so you can roll it. So is this going to mean that we'll extend that warranty, or what's going to happen? I mean, we say that warranty started at a certain date. All right, that's fine, but we're another year out before we can do anything about what we've got the problem with right today. So is that going to extend that portion of it until it's actually finalized?
I think that's the approach we should take with the contractor, yes. Anytime they fix a deficiency like that, we need to talk to them about extending the warranty. If it's a minor item that there is no other issue, that's one thing, but if it's a reoccurring problem or a problem they've not taken care of in a timely manner, that's something different. Plus, if it's a safety issue, the city doesn't have to wait for the contractor to come out. It can take action to get it done immediately if it's something of great magnitude.
I've noticed several times if you're going west on Main Street at 14th Avenue,
mm-hmm.
you cross where the joint is together, and there's evidently a little dip there.
Okay.
Is that something that's in your, you know, because I've noticed several times rigs going across there, you get a bounce there.
That's westbound on
Westbound Main. On Main coming by, and it is on the east side of the street.
Okay.
Just right about, it's right about where the joint is, I think, between the new stuff and the old.
Got it. We will check that right away.
Back in May, we were gave a copy of a punch list
mm-hmm.
with considerable number of items. Were all those items taken care of satisfactory and to approval of Terry? And
yes.
Yep.
There were actually a couple of punch lists besides the initial one, and all of the items the contractor did accomplish, except for the wrinkles that are still there, and that's an ongoing issue that they're still working on.
So there's a way to approach the contractor to get an extended warranty on that area, correct?
Yes.
How far out can we stick that? Because to me, if you leave that there and we keep hitting it with tires, eventually it's going to start breaking up, cracking, and crumbling. You know, just because you keep constantly hitting it with something.
Sure.
All the way up, you know, the hill to the city hall out here. You know, so what is our, how do we approach that? How do we move forward to protect ourselves?
I don't think it's out of line to ask for an additional 2 years. I think if there's going to be anything that does happen, it'll probably happen within the first year, or actually the first 2 years, the actual warranty period. But I don't think it's out of line to ask for additional 2 years.
And if they can't get it done, can't get it flattened out?
If they can't get the wrinkles out, there's a few different options. One would be to get an extended warranty on it. Another would be to actually physically cut it out and repatch it. And I know when this first came up, the consensus then was not to cut it out and patch it. But I think that's still a possibility.
So like grind it out, you mean?
Pardon me?
Like grind it out?
Yeah.
Gina, you had some?
I was just going to ask, you're saying an initial 2 years from the time they actually fix it.
I would say 2 years on top of the existing warranty. And that's not unheard of. We have done that before with other projects where there was deficiency that took the contractor time to repair.
Yeah, because I guess like all of us here, where I'm sure we're feeling like once this is done, we're going to take a back seat to all the projects. So we want to make sure this project's done right. We paid a lot of money. We want it done right.
Absolutely.
So we know once we sign on the dotted line and all this, it's like we're out of their mind and they're off to the next project, and where's Othello? Who knows?
But that's why we have the performance bond that they've signed as part of the contract with the city with the 2 year warranty.
So, does that performance bond get extended 2 years then?
That's typically the way it's done.
Okay.
There'd be a letter that extends it, it's agreed to by the contractor and the city.
Comment.
Go ahead.
I don't want to go in how disappointed I am in this whole project, because everybody's heard it before, but there seems to be continued disconnects, because I bet I was told at least three times, and I'd have to go listen to the tape of who told me, that when they did come and roll, they were going to roll sideways. And now I hear when they came and rolled, they didn't do that, and they're going to do it in the future. So that's very unfortunate that one got by. My other comment would be, we're talking about extending the warranty. I will not approve this project is finished until I get in writing that the warranty has been extended 2 more years. So that's the way I want to, that's the order I want to go with this. And if that's not accepted and they want to sue me, then my personal opinion is bring it.
Catherine, is that something we can do as far as liability on the city?
Well,
request the warranty before we...
Typically, and I'd have to look at the contract language in this specific contract, but typically what we require in our public works contracts is that it is a provision where if they have to come back and correct substandard or deficient work, then it automatically, under the terms of the contract, extends the warranty as to that that corrected work for an additional 2 years, and they're still on the hook with the performance bond as to that additional work. So I would have to see the specific contract to tell you if that language is in there, but that's typically what we have in the contracts.
So if we decide not to vote to pass this, is there liability on the city until we get, you know, in writing from the general contractor?
Or to verify that language is actually in the contract.
Okay.
I think you could table this until the next meeting to do that.
Now, there's no funding agency or regulatory agency driving the acceptance tonight. You know, sometimes there are. In this case,
I was trying to find out. Okay. Didn't word it right, I guess.
Isn't there two pots of money at stake here? One, their final payment they're asking for, and two, the contingency fund that we've taken out all along as we paid them?
I don't know about the contingency fund, but the contractor does have a request for final payment. They completed the work basically in June. It took until August to go through with them and finalize to make sure all the quantities were accurate. There were a few times we went round and around with them on that.
Don't we always hold some money back when we pay them, Mike?
Yes, 5%. We have a contingency of a little over $222,000, and we have an outstanding payment, an invoice from them, but it includes retainage that is about $109,000 in total. What we would do is we would pay the $104,000, and then the other would be part of the retainage. But the total is $109,000.
That I should use retainage instead of contingency. Okay.
There is a 5% retainage on all of the work the contractor's done. That doesn't get released until, first of all, the project would be accepted as complete. There's a 45-day window for subcontractors, suppliers to file a lien, and there's also three releases that the city would need to have from the state, Department of Revenue, Employment Security Department, and Department of Labor and Industries before retainage can be released. And typically, that takes 2 to 3 months. So from project acceptance, it's still minimum 2 to 3 months before retainage would be released.
Well, we paid them all along without saying the project has been completed. So I was guessing there's a lot of flexibility here, as we could vote not to accept the project as complete, but go ahead and pay them that final payment, or vice versa, or do vote not to accept it as complete and not pay them. There's a lot of options at this point. Because I'm guessing if we don't pay them, there's going to be some kind of legal action going. And they probably don't care whether we formally accept the project or not if we pay them.
Yeah, the contractor has indicated they would like to be paid.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things I wanted too, so.
Yep.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I kind of agree with what Mark's saying here. You know, they've actually done their work. That's done and completed. I don't see any reason why they can't get that final payment. We just hold back the retainage, and then we'll iron out this hassle between the warranty and take care of that problem. I don't know if we need to amend what we're trying to do tonight to make that work, but we could do it that way and take care of this payment at least, and then extend the total amount till later date until we get all this resolved.
Let me make sure I understand Councilmember Kaler's comment. So you're saying or suggesting to the council they pay the 109 and Mike, no, the 104, because the 109 is with retainage. The 104, get that out of the way, but don't accept the project yet. Is that what you're saying? Okay. Yeah, we would need council authorization to do that.
Would that work, Larry?
Oh, yeah. See, no problem with that at all.
Any further discussion?
I'll make a motion to that effect.
Okay, so you're making a motion. You want to make a motion to not approve the resolution accepting the 2010 street and infrastructure improvement project, but release the $104,000 to finish payment to the general contractor. Correct? Does that sound right?
We could just make a motion to do an action, because it's not really appropriate to make a negative motion. So whatever the positive motion would be to pay that.
Okay.
You said it correctly. The result is the same.
Yeah, we could do it two different actions. We could do it with this as far as the payment, and then come back to that action.
If you don't want to accept the project, you do nothing.
If you do nothing, yeah.
Right. Let's do it that way. I'll make a motion to go ahead and pay the final payment to RM for their work.
For $104,000. Want to say that in your motion for $104,000?
For $104,000.
Well, Mike, would it be better if they said invoice number 12, which is the final invoice?
Invoice number 12. And it would be a budget amendment. It would be a budget amendment for the ministry fund.
So just to be specific, so we say invoice number 12, if you would. That way it ties into it.
I move to approve their final billing of invoice number 12 for our Main Street project. That's it.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, Mark seconded. Any further discussion? Mark?
We just talked 2 minutes ago that we give them the money, we lose all our leverage, so there's no way I'm voting for that. That's ridiculous. Plus, we don't know what the heck we're doing, because that has to be a budget amendment. I have no idea. We took loans and had money. We have a budget, then we had a bid to pay that budget. I don't know why this has to be a budget amendment. So I think we're all out of whack here. You pay them, they'll be gone.
I thought you were the one that just mentioned paying them $104,000.
Yeah. No, I said I wouldn't. I said it's an option.
We could pay them the $104,000 and keep the, we're going to be keeping the retainage.
Yeah, $225,000 retainage.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's another $5,000 in that $104. I mean, it's a total of $109,000, but we only pay them $104,000. We keep another total of $5,000.
And Catherine, legally, can we withhold that final payment, or can we just withhold the retainage?
If the work has been completed, they're entitled to final payment under the contract.
I don't know. To me, it says work completed to specifications, and to me, we're a long way from that. And that's my, be my argument is why they're not getting paid.
I would have felt a lot more comfortable tabling this until we had a time for our attorney to go over the contract and make sure, because we're under no pressure to pass this tonight, my understanding.
Right.
We do have a current invoice set in there, but it does need a budget amendment to approve it, and I think we need to go over the numbers on that a little bit more, but I really believe that the attorney needs to look over the contract, make sure that we are going to be covered for additional warranty time, and I think she needs the time to do that. I would have felt comfortable just to table this till our next council meeting, since we're not under pressure to get it passed, until we could get confirmed that our warranties are going to be covered for additional time.
So even the payment you're saying?
Yes.
Is that a motion to table?
I would like to make a motion to table this to our next city council meeting.
I'll second.
To give the...
Can I have a second? What's that?
Regular city council meeting.
So Catherine, where do we go from here? Have a vote on it? On table? Okay. Do I hear a motion on tabling?
I made the motion.
Yeah. Ken made the motion. Who's second? Charles seconded. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same? Okay. We table it.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, my understanding, this is like a secondary motion that you can make, and that actually tables that motion.
Okay.
But it has to be brought up again.
Yeah.
It's the original motion is still alive at the date we said.
Okay. All right. Discussion of liquor sale referendum. Ken Kaler.
Okay, what we got, we've got an initiative out here that's 1183. That is practically exactly the same thing come up a year ago. I think it was number initiative 1105. Back in August 9th, 2010, this council recommended a no vote on. And there's several reasons, and I don't think the reasons have changed a bit. You take a small town like Othello, and we get a pretty good revenue off of that. Just take, for instance, I got some figures today. Othello gets, from the direct excise tax, we get $26,000. Out of the liquor board profits, we get $53,000. Total of $79,000 comes into our city of Othello, or it goes into our general fund, and then it's broken back out from there. Law enforcement gets a lot of that, and it's broken down. But you think about that, we've got 7,450 people. That's $10.60 per person we get money from. If this thing is a yes vote, basically, and we no longer have the state in the liquor business, a lot of things happen. Number one, you're going to unemploy over 1,000 people. There'll be no longer liquor stores up and down the different areas. Your big box stores are the ones pushing this issue. One place it says, well, anything over 10,000 square feet, you can't have a liquor store. Well, you know that's a bunch of baloney, because there'll be a lot of smaller stores, your grocery stores, your service stations, they can sell beer and things like that, so there's no reason they couldn't sell hard liquor as well. The tax revenue from it, where's it go? Nobody knows. It's going to end up in legislature. They'll have to argue this out, try to figure out where it's at. They may add a little to it. We may get a little of that back. But percentage-wise, I don't think you're going to get anything near what you got today. You look at your box stores, most of them are in your larger cities, so your smaller cities are going to get less money from what they actually sell in those cities, and that's where we benefit, because we get money from all parts of the state, not just West Soldier. So I think that we should have a resolution maintaining that we still are against this initiative as far as City of Othello. And I'd also recommend that we send our recommendation to AWC as a recommendation that we do not accept that and go from there and see what happens. I know it's getting a little late. We did do this in August of last year. We only got about a month to go here, and this initiative will be on the ballot. So that's my comment. Any questions? Why? Catherine can answer
more. Okay, is this something we're looking at voting on? No? Okay.
I mean, it's good. I'm not sure this is the resolution, but for point, counterpoint, sometimes I wonder why the state is involved in the selling of liquor. And we talk about loss of employment. If you go private, somebody still has to transport it and stock it and ring it up. So it's similar to over at the county building. We used to have two people hand out your tabs to your license plate, and we got rid of that. And everybody says, "Oh, we lost two employees." Well, it went to private. They're over here now, and there's two employees issuing tabs. So you didn't lose employment, it just went private. What about losing tax revenue, it you gotta equate it to cigarettes. The state isn't involved in the sale of cigarettes, but how you still get money from liquor and cigarettes, like they do with cigarettes, is you just tax the crap out of it. So the state could just add a bunch of taxes and excise tax, and so it would, the state could still get income from the sale of liquor. But I don't know if that's all included in this specific resolution that they put before. It might be in the interest of the people selling it. But to me, there's certain things you could do to make it beneficial to the state to privatize it, under the theory of why, you know, we're not involved in the sale of cigarettes or other things that degrade society and contribute to unhealthiness, but we're hanging on to liquor, and maybe it's not government's place to do that.
Any other comments?
Underage drinking and
It's interesting theory about if you change where you can buy it from, that it that more people are going to buy it.
You look at a grocery store in California, you can buy it anywhere in California. Yeah. And then you look at their rate of alcoholism and a few other issues, and it's far greater than Washington, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. There's no doubt there's some upsides to controlling it. I'll consent to that. I disagree with that.
Another issue too is the profit from liquor. We're keeping it in a state where the profit in your box stores and whatnot, it'll go out of state. So you won't get that revenue. You may get it from the added taxes, but as much as everybody hates to add on more taxes, are you going to gain as much as what you're going to lose? I don't think so.
And just like you were saying, right now the taxes that are being paid on alcohol is designated for just like what we get, almost $76,000, and it helps pay for, I believe it pays for an officer and even part of yours, don't it, Chief?
And
if we do lose this, we also lose the designation where this money goes. Yeah, they could keep on raising the taxes on it. The state's going to grab it up right away. They're not going to disperse it back down to the cities because they're in a crunch themselves enough that they're going to find another place to put it besides back into the cities.
Okay, well, this is a good discussion. Okay, unfinished business. Has everybody had a chance to look at the 2012 Budget Council Committee meetings coming up? Is there any changes we need to do? Yeah, there's, you have the paper here in front of you? The committees that you're on? Now, these are open to the public, so if there's any people running for council here, you're welcome to come to any of these. Just let us know you're coming. That way, if it's a luncheon or something, we'll have that covered, so.
Contracts due by October the 5th. I won't be able to be here. I have an appointment for my eye in Seattle that day. So, somebody else wants to sit in.
Okay, on contracts. Dan, can I make that first one? Is there somebody that want to trade with him?
Don't everybody say something once.
It's a short committee meeting. We just basically pass out the list of contracts, obligations the city has, and tie a number to all the contracts. It really is non-discretionable funds for the council. So, and that'll go to all the council members anyway.
Dan, I'll take that one. We'll take tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Did you catch it? Or do you want to do
whatever? You want to change it to a different day?
Oh, tomorrow, fire council you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go find my Long story.
Go. We just got them contracts here not long ago.
Okay, any other unfinished business? New business.
I would just like to bring up that the COPE committee met this week, and the numbers looked a lot better than last year, even though our attendance was down considerably this year because of the colder weather. I believe Vista had it at an average of 10 degrees less this year. We were almost 26,000 under what we did last year for expenses. So the improvements and the changes that the city crew made and Terry made, and they're overseeing it, and with our pool manager, they did a great job this year on helping keeping our expenses down on that.
That's good. Any other new business?
Couple games still on.
Good luck. Okay, mayor's announcements.
The Fire Council will be meeting with the Adams County Fire District Number 5 tomorrow, Tuesday, September 27th at City Hall at noon. So that's Snyder, Spohr, and Dan, you're going to hit that one? For Charles?
Yeah.
You're going to do that one? Okay. Okay, Charles, so I guess you're off on that one. Okay, the Othello Christian Church is sponsoring the Outreach Concert and Disaster Relief Feeding Program, scheduled for this Friday from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at Lions Park. The council approved use of Lions Park for the event in August. This event is open to the public. There will be a town hall meeting with DSHS, possible budget reductions and their impact on local communities. The meeting will be in both Yakima and Spokane, and the Yakima meeting will be September 29th from 1:30 to 3:30, and the Spokane will be October 19th, 5:30 to 7:30. Please see the attached letter from DSHS for more information. And also remember that the budget committee meetings start next month, and you have a copy of the schedule. Eamon has extras to hand out, so please note the solid waste budget committee meeting is on Friday the 7th, not Saturday. Everybody knows that, that's on it. Okay, any other announcements we need to know? Okay, we're now going to go into executive session for potential litigation, and the city attorney will be present. And we're going to go 20 minutes, you think?
No more than that.
No more than 20 minutes? Okay, for 20 minutes. And it's 8:02. Say that in the mic.
Sure, I was going to send you one.
Oh.
I sent mail it to you.
Oh, jeez.
You betcha.
Guys in football.